Okay, so welcome to the May 6th use case realization call. We're at the threshold of our 7 Guilin release. It was just announced by Catherine Lefebvre that the release is officially kicked off. So on behalf of the TFC, she's kicking off the first phase of Guilin, and from May 7th to May 27th, she's inviting people to define their requirements, create epics, and important that the information will be written in a way that's consumable by PTLs and validate the architecture team for project proposals and requirements and consolidate company engagement. So today also we have David McBride with us, and he'll be talking about the release management and some Q&A with him on release management and some of his thoughts. I had become aware that might be moving to this Jira dashboard way of release management, so that would be, at least from my standpoint, I think it would be very interesting to hear about that. Some notes here, some of the upcoming realization calls. So today we're talking with David McBride. Next week we have a meeting with the modeling team, the PTL from the modeling team, Andy Mayer, and Ophir, the PTL of SDC, talking about starting off the release and thinking about how to think about your modeling and data information and data modeling, and starting to document that in the release 7 high level model requirements page, which is where we start to plan for the information modeling work that's going to happen in the release. And I've been working on the use case way of working process, which sort of ties into what Dave will be talking about. So I've been working on this page for the use case and requirements teams process, defining how we go about working and some of the things and activities that should happen in a release and at the start of release and through each of the gates, links to useful points in the at the various stages, and then interaction between modeling architecture and PTLs. So we'll be spending some time in the coming weeks to, now that it took, so I finished the modeling way of working page, and that took probably about a half a year to do, working a bit at a time with the team. So we'll be probably talking about that on May 20th. I believe May 28th is actually the sign-off of R6 officially, so we're kind of really close to that threshold of when we might
be. I actually been pushed out with the last delay of RC1. Pushed out into June.
June 4 or something.
I think, yeah.
I saw that, yeah. So let's see, these are... blue, right. So I've been coding the yellows with calls to talk about use case overviews, and blues are with leads in the community. So today will be a call with kind of a lead, and we'll be talking with Yuri again, who presented some weeks ago. And he's the CDS and then PTL. He talked to us and made a presentation. This is a really good presentation. You can listen to the recording. I talked about the CDS designer and UI client and CDS customer building blocks. There were a number of requests that he also have a follow-up presentation on runtime CDS and runtime execution. So we'll be having tentatively a presentation from him. This date might change, so I have to still work out the date with them. the June 3 date is here is totally tentative. So Sophia had presented maybe a couple months ago about the Read the Docs, and if you've attended the virtual face to face, which is really good, and you can find a link to that here on the virtual face to face. There were a couple of really good talks from the Read the Docs project. And there were people talking about how that might change, and how the objective is to move the documentation and read the in the wikis, at least some of the major pages, let's say, into the read doc. So that's quite an ambitious objective, and I'm not sure exactly when that'll happen, but anyway, I had invited Sophia to talk again and to kind of walk people through her vision and how that might happen, because I think a lot of people are going to need to get involved to make that actually happen, and that's not a trivial thing to happen. So the ONS meeting that was due to happen in April 2022-23 got pushed out. so I think it's scheduled for the fall. And the plug fest that we had last year, that usually we have the plug fest in June, but that's probably going to get pushed to the fall as well. Okay, so those are just some views of the upcoming meetings, and you can always find a link to these off of the R7 page here. So I see some other people joined.
Yeah, actually, Ben, I think the plug fest, if we're thinking about the same event.
Yeah,
is going to be run in June still, but it'll be run as a virtual event.
Oh, okay.
Currently scheduled for June 1 through 4.
I see, because the last one was sort of a hands-on demo thing. So maybe there'll be just a few people in the actual labs or something, and people will join remotely. Yeah, now that we've kind of learned how to do that, I think that's going to be very interesting. Actually, we have, while we're on that topic, I see Timo just joined. Maybe you can say a few words. He helped. He was very instrumental, or one of the people that helped plan the April virtual face-to-face. So Timo, did you want to say maybe a few words about the next upcoming one? I think it's scheduled for June.
This is the one I was referring to. Is that the same one that you were talking about, Ben, on your schedule?
Yeah, I think so. Timo, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Okay, about the June event, we are, like David said, currently the plan is that it will be from 1st to 4th, so first week of June. There's a little bit of now discussion or a question raised that 1st of June is actually a bank holiday in Europe, at least many parts. So maybe that will that have an impact on participation levels on Monday? We don't know. Maybe we need to think about that. So we haven't started yet to collect the topic proposals. I think it is already possible. The wiki pages are there, but it hasn't really been advertised yet. The important kind of planning target, at least, is to allow as much as possible cross-community sessions. So on up with other elephant projects, discussing topics that are kind of relevant for both or all. And then obviously there will be kind of a project specific sessions as well, I would assume. But really the planning has just started, and then we don't have really any kind of tangible details to offer. The timing of the event is probably similar to what we had in April, so roughly three hours on each of those days, pretty much the same time window as we had on April.
And that golden window of that everywhere in the world,
that's,
you kind of meet the 3 hours.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. So I think pretty much all the global organizations have tried different ways, and at the end of the day, this European late afternoon seems to be the thing that creates least pain. Although for some folks it's going to be again early, and for some folks it's going to be really late. Just an anecdotal thing at the maybe more than a year ago in ONAP TSC, we decided that most of our weekly meetings or regular meetings should not be before 6 a.m. or after midnight for anybody, which gives us like a gave then us like a 3-hour window from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific, for example. But that doesn't hold anymore because we have already also folks, for example, from Australia. So if we would follow that agreement, then we would have 1-hour window left.
I think one thing that's interesting for me, well, two things that's interesting for me. One is that the meetings that we have in the spring and the fall tend to be revolving around planning. So obviously in April, you're talking a lot about what's the content of R7 going to be. And for me, the ones in the middle, the summer and the winter, should be more, well, now that we have the release kind of underway, there's lots to talk about because we have lots of technical content to share and progress and where we are or planning and modeling and things. So there's lots, and always there's going to be perpetual topics such as architecture and modeling always makes presentations, right? So that makes sense. But for me, like we just had a meeting not that long ago, just a couple of weeks ago, and the sign-off, because the release of R6 sign-off got pushed out by some number of weeks, it feels really soon to have this thing in June. Has there been some thought of maybe pushing it to a little bit later?
No, there hasn't been really discussion. I mean, we've had only two kind of program committee sessions, and I couldn't join the previous one, the latest one. Okay. So this week, I believe we will be discussing the question of Monday, June 1st, and I believe that also that came up also yesterday in architecture subcommittee.
Yeah.
This idea that it may be a little early, especially for ONAP in our.
I mean, one possibility is instead of running it in a block of 3 or 5 days, just now that we're all virtual, just run it one day a week on every Monday over a month or something like that.
Yeah.
That's another possibility that might be good.
And I think that was also brought up, I think, in one of these program committee sessions, but at that meeting we kind of decided to stay with the 4-day block at least for time being for the planning, but I agree it's a little bit early for ONAP in our release. We need to it's a good idea to discuss and find out if there's any alternative that would serve us better. We just need to remember it's kind of LFN event, so it's supposed to be something where the
joint
LFN
event.
Projects are coming together, and therefore the idea of trying to find out as much as possible these cross-community topics to be discussed. One option would be that there would be this event and there would be the cross-committee topics for ONAP, and then we defer the release related discussions to a little bit later. Let's see. Just thinking out loud. There's no.
So my other question was what do you sort of think the content of this will be? Will it be a quarter, 30% like ONAP and 60% other LFN projects? And also, do you think the content of the, what is your vision of what you think people should be presenting?
Well, I think we are kind of community driven. So we really depend on what the proposals are. But I think what the program committee will try to do is to come up with, let's say, sort of themes that could be or should be relevant to more than one project, one community, and kind of prioritize those. And that probably is then where we would ask people to think from that angle of what they would want to discuss. So I kind of foresee that as one track of things. So thinking of stuff that is sort of relevant for more than one project, but then I think the rest would be kind of similar to what we've had on summers and winters.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thanks. So Dave, did you want to drive? Did you want to share a screen, or do you want to just go to the release planning pages and talk? Or
I have a presentation I can share.
Oh, great. Okay. Let me stop sharing.
Oops. Sorry, I'm mixing up my presentations. Where'd you go? All right, let's try that again. All right. First of all, Ben, thanks for inviting me. I'm actively trying to socialize this information, so this is a great opportunity to talk to people. And I was going to mention, too, I know we have a little bit of a light turnout today. So if you would like me to come back sometime, you know, like in a month or whatever.
For sure, yeah, that'd be good.
I'd be happy to do that. So I'm going to talk about a couple of things related to JIRA and requirements, release requirements today. One is just some improvements that I've made to the template that I think will make things a little smoother. And then also just a proposal for us to begin using JIRA more actively, especially a JIRA dashboard as opposed to the Confluence table that we've traditionally used in ONAP for tracking requirements. And I'll get into the reasons behind that. So first of all, let's talk about where we're at, what we've done so far. So beginning in Frankfurt, you'll recall that I introduced the idea of creating a JIRA ticket for each requirement and use case, and not really to track the technical progress, the technical issues, but really to track it through the release process and its relationship to the TSC. So this is really more of a kind of administrative and a management tool. However, what I've done is I've encouraged teams to create a network of JIRA tickets. So create a story that attaches to this JIRA issue and then all of their technical tasks tied to the requirement, flow out of that. So that enables the TSC, other stakeholders to access all the information about the requirement, starting with the release requirement or the use case. Issue in the REQ JIRA project. So that began as of the Frankfurt release. So the way that I set it up initially was that there was an epic, and then I had three tasks attached to that to track, each one was assigned to a milestone to track TSC approval. And that turned out to be a little bit awkward, particularly even though the cloning process for creating an issue from the template is fairly straightforward, a lot of people forgot to check the box to copy the tasks attached to the ticket. So then we had to go back and fix that. And it just ended up being rather awkward. So that refers to this first bullet here. The other thing too is that if you look at the requirements table in the wiki, you'll notice that there are a lot of fields there that were not represented in the template. We also had a handful of requirements that did not create JIRA issues. So we had the compliance with using JIRA was a little bit uneven, not bad. I would say probably less than 10%, maybe only about 5%. There was some confusion about, there was one or more teams that tried to have one JIRA ticket representing multiple requirements. Which we don't want. We want to have a one-to-one relationship, one JIRA issue for one requirement. And then, of course, you know, just the fact that we were kind of using two systems in parallel, the table and JIRA, so that was kind of inefficient. And this second to last bullet is probably one of the things that that I find the most awkward about using the requirements table, and that is tracking comments. You know, we want people to provide some context, you know, like if they say for M2, M3, that their scorecard is yellow, well, why is it yellow? So we like the teams to put in some comments to explain that. But when you're working with a table and you've got, you know, 50 or 60 requirements, and they're all trying to you know, add comments in a table format, that gets very awkward and cumbersome. And then there were some missteps, which I attribute just to kind of carry over from, you know, how it's always been done. But we really didn't leverage using the JIRA key. So in an example of that is if you look at the integration test status table for Frankfurt, you'll see there's a number in the left-hand column, and that number was then stuck into the requirements table to say, okay, for this requirement, it's tracking under item number, you know, 17 on the integration test. Well, if you think about that, if we consistently use JIRA and the key, the JIRA key to index everything, then we don't have to have, you know, separate numbering. In my opinion, the integration test status table should be simply indexed by the JIRA key. And I think that simplifies things. And you'll see on a later slide that I talk about eventually also transitioning that table into JIRA as well. So that's kind of where we are. This is what happened, you know, with the first attempt to use JIRA to track release requirements. Okay, so what's different about Julin? Okay, so I've gotten rid of the child issues to simplify cloning. So We don't have to worry about when people clone the issue that they forget to copy the tasks, because all of that is now built into the template through a set of custom fields that I generated. And I updated the process for creating and updating the release requirements. So let's take a quick look at that. Any questions so far?
So what's the child? It was not too clear, the child issues. Can you say a little bit more about that before you, what does that really mean?
Yeah. Well, let's just take a look at one, an example. So if we go to the Frankfurt requirements page, and let's just take one at random here. Let's say Rec 80. Okay, so you see it has these three child issues. So these were actually part of the template. These were attached to Rec 1.
Okay, I remember. Yeah, okay. So I know.
And so if we go to more and select clone +++, then you can see there's this option to copy issues in Epic. And so that's a step that people would often forget. And so these tasks that tracked TSC approval wouldn't get copied. So then we'd have to go back in and do it after the fact, which, you know, created a lot of additional work. So so I just decided that it was, you know, too difficult to work it that way. So I decided to just keep everything, all the fields tied to the Epic instead of trying to use child tasks. Okay, so you can see that I added an update for Julin, and this just documents the changes to the Epic. And so here's the new process. So basically what you're going to do is you're going to go to Rec 1, which is the template. Actually, let me open a new tab. Okay, and right away you'll notice some differences. So what I've done is I've, within the description field, I've created a template. And so this represents many of the fields that you see on the release requirements page. So if we take a look at that, so you see like, let's see here. So link to HLD, LLD, dependencies, t-shirt size, project impact, etc. So a lot of that information is collected here in this template in the description field. So what folks will do is they'll navigate to this template issue, select clone +++.
And what's the difference between clone plus and clone +++?
I'm not sure between clone plus and clone +++. Clone +++ and clone, it allows you to do more things. Like you can, I don't think that clone allows you to clone into another project. It just clones into the same project, I think. And it also allows you to do some things like change some of the fields in process, where I think that the clone is, it's literally a clone of the current issue, which is frequently not what you want. You want to clone it, but you want to, you know, change some of the fields at the same time. So it allows you to do all of that within the cloning process itself. So here's some examples, like, you know, you can copy links, comments, things like that, which the standard clone doesn't allow you to do. Okay, so the first thing you'll do is change the epic name in the summary. And you can go ahead and fill in these fields now, or you can edit them later.
And so you can see it's all. If a use case has multiple epics, do we create one of these per requirement per epic, or?
So we need to distinguish between, you know, what might be a technical epic and this one, which is basically used to track the requirement through and all the TSC approvals and so on. So the idea is that you create one or more stories and you link those to this issue. And then all of your requirements fall out under that. And I can't remember if you can link an epic to another epic. I have to look into that. But this should be distinguished from all of the technical content. This is strictly, a management administrative tool to track the status of the requirement within the release process and tracking the TSC approvals at the milestones and changes to the scope and things like that.
So the epic story, epic, right? Each use case, we can only have one epic, we can have two up, you know, two above. Or you just say we'll leave with the one epic and then link different user stories.
Yeah, you can only have one epic for your requirement within the REQ project, okay? But you can have as many epics for your requirement, within other JIRA projects as you need. But for the REQ project, the release requirements project, we only want one epic per requirement.
Okay,
so you click create, and so now you can start to see some of the other fields that are here, some of the fields don't appear initially if they don't have a default value. But if we click edit here, then you can begin to see all of the fields that are available. So we have TSC priority. I actually added that under Frankfurt. That was already there. Some of the new fields that I've added, I created one for architectural review status. Because there was some confusion about this, and it's not really tracked that well under the Confluence table. So I created a field so we can track which ones have been performed. And then also the scope status. So as you're aware, a number of requirements as they go through the process and people start to understand the level of effort and so on, and maybe it turns out to be larger than what they anticipated, and so the scope gets reduced, or it might be descoped altogether. And so this field allows us to track the status of the scope. So it defaults to original scope. And then if at some point, you know, say at M2, M3, the requirements owners decide to reduce the scope, then they can change this field here. And of course, we would expect them to add a comment, a JIRA comment explaining the change in scope. Here's the t-shirt size. That's pretty self-explanatory. Now we get into the scorecards. So so here's the scorecard for M1, and you know, the standard green, yellow, red. Here's TSC approval, and of course in this back and forth, what I would like people to do is to use instead of putting comments explaining, you know, let's say that someone says, well, I'm at yellow. Well, why? Well, put a comment in the JIRA explaining why, you know, the status. Why are you saying that your scorecard is yellow? What's going on? And then the either myself or Catherine probably would then set the once the TSC goes through the decision process, set the decision of the TSC, whether it's go with condition or no go. And then the same thing, of course, repeats for M2, M3, M4. I also threw one in here for RC0, since it's uncommon, but we did do that for Frankfurt. And so I created a default for RC0 that not used for this release, because I think typically we won't do that. But if we do, this field's available to track that as well. So those are all
you mentioned that you can, there's a field somewhere you can explain where the reason for a particular status. I heard you say something like you can enter something like that in.
Yeah, well, I'm just talking about standard JIRA comments. So down here.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Okay. So we decided to reduce scope. We are deferring work on component one and component two, and will only complete work on component three for the Julian release.
Yeah, I thought maybe there was some other field that we didn't see on that previous page. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, and so you can see, I mean, I think everyone on this call has worked with JIRA, and so, you know, you can have this long chain of comments. So you can imagine, you know, the say Catherine and a requirement owner going back and forth, and Catherine's asking questions, and what's the status of this, and what are you doing about this? And then the requirement owner responds with a comment, and you capture that entire history, so you can see what's been going on with the requirement from the beginning. Whereas with the table, you know, what happens is that, you know, people will add a comment. Well, what are they doing? Well, they're typically overwriting, a comment that was there previously. Now, you can go back in Confluence and look at the history of the table and maybe track that down. But it's very, in my opinion, it's very awkward. So, you know, I think one of the biggest gains of using JIRA instead of this table is the ability to pretty much infinitely have a conversation going back and forth, you know, with, you know, say the TSC trying to understand something from the requirement owner and the requirement owner responding. I mean, I think we've all looked at, you know, JIRA issues that, you know, have 57 comments attached to them. And that's no problem under JIRA, but trying to manage that back and forth using a table format like this is horrendous.
Absolutely. I think another huge drawback to the table format was that I found it was extremely hard to scroll across and see all the fields and get to the field that I wanted to get to. It was extremely hard to navigate around.
Yeah, and, or to find a particular issue on the table.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. And the other thing, too, I think also was that I found that, you know, because that box is so teeny, you felt like you were always trying to write something really maybe more, you know, we always felt that we were just writing something really sort of short.
Right.
To try to say, just capture the problem in four words or whatever.
Yeah. And some of the things that we're trying to convey, I mean, we're talking about complex technical issues. And there could be a whole series of things that, for example, is holding up a requirements team. And, you know, using the comment format within JIRA, you know, gives you the freedom to express whatever you need to express. Whereas, as you said, you know, it's very limited within the table format. Okay, so that's what the updated process looks like. And it's, you know, it's been simplified in that you no longer have to copy any tasks along with the epic. You just have to clone the epic. So one of the, you know, when I brought this up in the past, what people, the counter that people often make is, you know, well, I really like having that table format because it's all laid out in front of me and I can see what's going on with all of the requirements at once. Well, I think JIRA has that pretty well covered by using a JIRA dashboard. And so I put together a dashboard with some phony requirements, just to give you an example of what that would look like. Okay, so this is what how the you know, our traditional requirements table might look like using a JIRA dashboard. And if you look at these headings across the top, you'll see that, you know, they're very similar to what we find under the release requirements table, with the benefit that this is much easier to manipulate. Okay. And in fact, there's even a better view. JIRA provides this thing called a wall board.
So walk us through, like, before you leave that. This is the same thing.
It just expands. This is designed for being displayed like on a large screen, like in a conference or a large meeting room or something.
So if you walk us through, the key is the JIRA ticket number, basically.
Right.
The summary is directly word for word, or does it, what if you have a very long summary? Does it shorten it? Does it just run over?
You might be confusing the summary with the description.
Oh, okay.
So this is
Just the title.
Yeah, this thing up here. Yeah, it's kind of an odd name because summary implies something longer, but it's really just this title for the ticket up here.
Okay, and then there's the epic name, architectural review status. Okay, t-shirt size, TC priority. And if there's nothing in the field, I guess it leaves it blank, I suppose.
Some of these have defaults attached to them, but some of them, you know, like the scorecards and so on, don't have defaults. So if it's blank, it just hasn't been selected.
And can you control what fields are shown, or is this?
Yes.
Okay. And yep. So you set it up so that you see all of the scorecards. So kind of at a glance, you can see, basically you can see where the sort of status is, I guess.
Right. And that's similar to, you know, what you see on the
right.
On the requirements table, right? You have the M1 scorecard, approval, right. M2 scorecard, approval, M4, et cetera. So I tried to mimic more or less what is displayed on the requirements table currently.
Yeah, but it seems like it's showing it in an even more concise format. That's interesting.
Yeah. Well, part of that is that it doesn't include the comments. And that's criticism that some people might make, is that it's like, well, but, you know, with this table, then I can see these, you know, comments that people make about their status. Well, that's true. But as we discussed before, the comments are extremely limited and you can't see any of the history because they mm-hmm. They typically get overwritten as people, as the status change and people, you know, update their status. So there is a little bit of a trade-off there, but, you know, if you want to see the comments, you know, all you have to do is, click on the issue and go to the issue. And then you can see, I just stuck a bunch of lorem ipsum text in here, just so you can see, you know, you can imagine this would be a back and forth between, you know, a requirement owner and the TSC, for example. But you can see the entire, and then of course you can also look at the history of, what's been done to the issue and how it's changed over time, right? In addition to the comment thread.
Yeah, I think there were three people using this. Number one, you, this release manager, I think this is super useful for you because you can immediately see what's green, yellow, and red. Number two, the people like here who would be working requirements and use cases, we usually just care about one particular use case. So, you know, for us, the dashboard is kind of nice, but we're more or less usually just going to go click into one particular thing anyway. The overall dashboard might be nice, but I think often we're just going straight into one thing. And the third is there are groups of people, for example, the 5G use case, and Joanne and I and others are working on the CMPS use case. So we may have particular teams of people working on specific things and where we would want a couple of related things together. And so, yeah, I mean, I think this is great. I think that that big table just felt super hard to navigate. And I was trying to find that. It was very hard to see, first of all, what needed to be filled in and what wasn't up to date and what we need to do. And secondly, when we did, it was very hard to just get to that point. I had to always try to shrink the screen and you couldn't scroll properly. This feels a whole lot better. Yeah.
And that's exactly the point that I'm trying to make. And so that kind of leads me into, now, before I go into the next slide, I just want to point out, so that I have these updates to the template for use in Julin. And then I've got a proposal to begin using this dashboard in place of the table. But those things aren't linked necessarily. So, people freak out and, you know, they'd say, we love our Confluence table. We don't want to stop using that. You know, that's fine. We can continue to use that along with these improvements to the template within Julin. So, they're related, but you know, one doesn't necessarily imply the other, if you see what I mean. Okay, so here's my proposal. Basically, that we replace requirements table with the Jira dashboard that I just showed, and I walked through some of the reasons for that, you know, better searching and sorting capabilities, you know, the comments, you know, as we discussed, the Confluence table cell limits you to short comments. You lose a history of comments frequently. The Confluence table, as you mentioned, Ben, gets awkward and ungainly when it gets very large. And then it's also easy to link requirements issues to related issues. So, you know, I mentioned before about the integration test status page. So my next target may be, you know, in the K release, the R8 release. I guess that's the H release, isn't it? Is to maybe consider creating a template for the a JIRA template for the test integration status page. And then that could be easily linked to the requirement. So you'd have really handy linking that could track the requirement from beginning, from inception, from M0 all the way through integration test. So that's my proposal. And I haven't had a chance to share this with Catherine yet, but hopefully I'll get a chance to do that this week. So what's next?
I think that's so great, actually. Yes, it looks great.
Cool. So I'm trying to socialize benefits. This is the first opportunity I've had to share this with the community. So thanks again for that opportunity. And I will probably be sharing this with the TSC at some point. So going forward, I want to try and encourage 100% compliance with using JIRA. As I mentioned before, we had a handful of requirements that didn't have a JIRA issue. So I'm going to try and get that up to 100%. And also maintain this one JIRA issue per requirement. And as I mentioned before, this is one JIRA issue within the, one EPIC within the REQ project. But if your requirement has, you know, more technically oriented epics, that are within other, you know, project JIRAs or, other JIRAs, you know, by all means, create all of those. One thing I can't remember what the rule is about linking epics, whether that's possible or not, because that's obviously what you want to do. But what we have asked is that at a minimum, requirements owners create a story and then link that story to this REQ ticket. Then I want to try and encourage use of JIRA comments instead of table cells to report requirement status, like we discussed earlier, since the JIRA comments allow you to track the history of the project. You can see all the comments back to the creation of the issue. And also you can write comments as long as they need to be. And then as I mentioned, ultimately, possibly for the next release, also create a template for tracking integration test status and replace that Confluence table with another JIRA dashboard. And that's it.
So I was, when you showed the two screens, the one that was black and the one that was sort of white, what was the difference between those? One was sort of a you said something like on the screen dashboard or something. Any other?
Well, one is, yeah, this is just, this is a Jira feature called the Wallboard.
Wallboard.
And okay. What it's designed to do is to, you know, you can imagine you're in a large conference room and you have like, you know, 60-inch video panel that you're projecting onto. And so this is designed to be displayed on a large screen. But the other thing that I find is handy about it is that it expands the
fields,
the table out to fill the screen, you know, whereas with this view, you know, you have this side panel over here and so on. I mean, it's not terrible, but it's a nice way to view the dashboard.
So how do you get between those two screens? What's the...
Can you see where my cursor is?
Yeah.
Yeah, so when you're on the, so you've looked at Jira dashboards before, I'm sure, right?
Maybe, no.
Oh, you're not familiar. Oh, okay. Yeah, so you can create, basically, if you're familiar with Jira queries, right? You create a search query.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Yeah, and then based on that query, you can create a dashboard, and it's designed for displaying
search,
you know, lots of data, and they have different gadgets that you can add to do different visualizations. This is a simple format of table format, but you know, like on the release milestone page, where it shows all of the projects and the status of the issues assigned to them. That's a Jira dashboard. It's just a different format of dashboard, but yeah. So once you have your dashboard,
this is existing functionality that anybody can basically just go and create a dashboard, and you choose what fields you want to show or whatever, right? Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I see.
Yeah, yeah. This is so if you have access to Jira, you can create your own dashboards, and you can share. You can select the level of sharing, so you can, you know, if it's just something for you personally, you know, defaults to private, but if it's something that you want to share, you know, with a community, make it available to everyone, then you can expand the how broadly it's shared.
I see.
And then, like you were saying, you're asking about switching.
So you could have done this to show R6 already. Like you could have already shown it to your dashboard for all of the R6 REQs. Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. I was just curious if this is. I wasn't sure if this is like an experimental thing that a function in Jira, or I didn't realize this just already existed. You could already just do this.
Yeah.
Or create one.
Yeah. No, Jira dashboards have been around for a long time. And, you know, I've mentioned, and in fact, I think that's how this invitation for me to present came about, because I was talking about using the dashboard instead of the Confluence table. And that kind of struck your interest, and then you invited me to
I just didn't even know. I didn't know anything about it. So yeah, that's interesting.
No, Jira dashboards have been a part of Jira for as long as I can remember, 10 years at least.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah. But yeah, to switch to the Wallboard, you know, there's this selection up here, View as Wallboard.
And do you know if there was any discussion before about using Jira dashboards? Why was there this original decision to use that unwieldy table? Was that, maybe that was before your time, but I...
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I kind of, well, you know, using Jira to track requirements, that was new. That's something that I introduced as a Frankfurt. But the tracking the requirements on in a Confluence table, I think that goes back a number of years. Well before my time. So I kind of inherited that format. But there's a lot of people that are very comfortable with using that format, and they're a little leery about switching to something else. So that's why I've kind of taken my time in trying to put together a presentation and like show this dashboard and say, hey guys, see, this looks a lot like the table that you like, only it's much easier to use.
I think any change, no matter what, some people aren't going to like it just because it's change.
yeah, exactly. And I'm no exception to that. I've been in the same position of, being used to doing things a certain way. And then, someone comes along and says, well, why are you doing it like that? Why don't we do it like this? And your immediate reaction, and I think it's just human nature, is, whoa, wait a minute. I like the way we're doing it,
Yeah.
So I totally understand that, and I don't fault people for it at all. But I think that if people look at this and see that it, they can see the fields and columns that they're familiar with and so on, but then they also see that, how easy it is to manipulate it as compared to the Confluence table, I think that a lot of people will be interested in doing this. I think it will be an improvement.
Sure. The other thing too is, couldn't you create a separate set? It seems like you could create several dashboards. One is the, let's show what's going on at say M1, and you take out the M2, M3, M4 fields, but yet you add a field that has like a description thing, that description field that people you anticipate that people might not like because it's missing. I mean, maybe you could just add that and it would, you could quickly see. So you have an M1 dashboard, and an M2 dashboard, and M3 dashboard, and then an overall dashboard like this.
Right.
And then you could just make a wiki page that goes to each of these different dashboards.
Yeah. And I thought about that too. I had that exact thought. But I wanted to, present something to people that looked very similar to the
that makes sense.
They're used to looking at, initially, and then initially, and then you could
and it's just interesting to see you edit this and how easy it is to edit this in real time. Like you just do this in a few seconds and it's updated. Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so this is what it would look like.
Right. Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
And is this a web link when you create this? Can you just say, here's a link to whatever, and and this will give you this particular view? Is that how it works?
Yeah, I can. Now, hopefully I've gotten the sharing right. I'll put the link in the chat. You can try it out. I think I said it correctly, but like I said, it defaults to, let's see, didn't get the right link. It defaults to private. And so one of the things you run into sometimes is you go, oh yeah, I've got this cool dashboard. You provide someone a link to it and they can't get to it because the permissions aren't set up correctly. So that's not uncommon.
I think what might be interesting is in your slide pack, I think you had a slide pack, you can just take some screenshots of here's the mega dashboard, and it shows a view similar to what you're used to seeing. And then you can show this to me looks like a great selling point. You just say, look, once you've got some of this set up, you can, at M0, this is what we'd be likely to use. And you know, I think people, that would turn people on, I think, to the idea. It feels like,
mm-hmm.
and you can see it's very versatile. You know, M0. You know, of course, people want to see the original thing. And you know, I read this interesting book that says many technologies, when they first start off, people always want to see the original technology because it comforts them. So for example, the first print was actually looked like script. The first steamboats actually had sails, you know, so people are comfortable with what they're comfortable with. And, you know, so that's this is a perfect example of you're showing, you know, here's what we used. So that mega dashboard is somewhat similar to that, but this is a whole lot more flexible. You can say that, you know, at M1, you know, we're likely to just be focusing on, and that's how you would use that mega table anyway. You don't care about the Bluetooth M3, M4 fields at M1. Everybody's just looking at, they have their eyeballs focused on M1. So this is a perfect example of that.
You know, when you mentioned that, I immediately thought about VNFs because, you know, you can see a similar evolution where, you know, the initial virtualization of network functions, you know, they were direct analogs to, you know, the hardware implementation, right?
Yeah.
And then over time, you know, that's been taken apart because people have realized that, you know, separating, you know, breaking down that functionality into individual components, services, you know, offers, you know, better efficiency and scaling. So gradually over time, it's, you know, resembles the original hardware implementation less and less.
Sure. So the other interesting thing too, is I noticed, for example, the architectural review status is this huge column just to capture go or no go, like 4 or 5 characters. Is there a way to, like on a Excel, you know, one of the useful functions is you can kind of compress the size of a column. And here, I guess, maybe the choice of words you use in the JIRA ticket is...
Right.
Or maybe you can edit the width of the column. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think that you can, actually.
So the choice might be, you know...
Yeah, so the thing to do would be to,
compress the wording of what it is, yeah.
Right, right. Then you can compress the columns. Yeah.
That was just an interesting observation that I see.
Yeah, David, can you post this link to the dashboard? We can play around the dashboard link.
Yeah, I think I'm not sure. Now I'm not sure that I can actually link to it. I tried. I think you have to actually go into JIRA and find it. If you go to the dashboard, if you go to JIRA, the ONAP JIRA, and you say manage dashboards, then you can go to search, and then search for. What did I call it? Yeah, so right here. And then select it. Okay. Well, it's giving me a link. It's giving me a link here. Let me.
You can put it in the chat. Yeah, that'd be.
Yeah. For some reason, I couldn't get it off of the, when I was displaying the dashboard, it wouldn't show it for me. I don't know why.
Also, could you show us the link or put in a link to the chat of the that JIRA template that we're supposed to use that you walked us through? Like, I guess for R7, we'll need to fill out that
copy. Yeah.
You know, you said clone plus plus. Yeah, this thing, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the same one.
It's not a new one.
Yeah, I just modified the original one. It's still REC1, so
okay.
If you go to JIRA and just enter, you know, REQ-1, it'll take you to it.
Oh, okay. Okay, got it.
And then the and there's also there's a link in there to the instructions, which is the Confluence page that I was the wiki page that I was showing earlier. And the idea that is that, and I noticed this too, and people, sometimes people would fill this in and then they'd leave the instructions in here. The idea is that once, copy it, and you go view the instructions, then you can delete it for your requirements.
So I notice in here, many of these were originally actually columns in that mega table.
Right.
But now this is just the description, which is actually maybe nice because then maybe when you do that dashboard thing, you just have one field and it'll show you all this key information all at once.
Yeah. I mean, you could go in and you could create custom fields for all of these, but they would just be text boxes. So then you'd have a bunch of text boxes all
over. And that's what makes that mega table unwieldy to begin with.
And so I thought, well, instead of having, a bunch of text boxes for all this stuff, just set up a template inside the description and have people, enter that information here.
Yeah, I like that, yeah. So how does the this shift? Have you heard of Sophia Wallen's shift to this to the read the docs? All the things moving to read the docs.
Right.
Will that affect how, like the link to HLD LLD? That's likely to be potentially a read the docs thing in the future. I guess that can adapt. I mean, this can easily adapt. You just edit it, right? When the process changes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, this is great. I like it.
Good.
Sharing, yeah. Okay. Did anybody else have any questions on, I guess, Joanne, or kind of over time?
So, fine.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you, Dave, very much for sharing this, and I'll socialize it to other meetings that I attend as well. I thought this is really useful. I think a lot of people should listen to this.
Good.
Recording, and I'll mention it in other places as well, because I think this is really interesting.
Yeah, but maybe you can put David, the instruction one, the instruction link to the your meeting notes. So
yeah, really people, right, yeah. Right. I'm gonna do that. Yeah, that's a good idea, John. Yeah, I think.
Yeah, and I can upload. If I can find your agenda or wherever you'd like me to put it, I can upload my slides to that.
Put that in the. So let me just share real quick. So let's see. So in the R7, let's see. Oh, where is it? So in the R7 use case page, this is where we have all of the R7 use cases and requirements. So this is from here, I'll put this in the chat, you can kind of reach everything, right?
Okay.
And I think it would be good maybe to have it just at the highest level here. I think let's do that because it's such a useful document here. So just add it to this base page here, and and just add it here, and that would be good.
Okay, we'll do.
And I'll add you the links that you gave to the end of the table here, because I think that dash. Well, I guess not the sample dashboard. I guess.
It's all linked inside the presentation. So.
Oh. Okay. All right. But the REQ one is still, I think, interesting. That's just because people need to use that anyway. So, okay, great. Well, thank you very much again. And we'll probably, again, I think there were some holidays or something in Europe and China. So
like I mentioned earlier, if you think it's useful, I'd be happy to come back
great.
In a month or whatever,
yeah,
or a few weeks, and give this presentation again.
Right. Certainly as the release gets underway, as we get into M0 and 1, yeah, that would be definitely good. Okay, great. Thanks a lot then. Have a good day, everybody.
All right. Thanks, Ben. Okay. Bye.